Thank you so much for being here today. I'm really excited to be able to share some of the work that we're doing at CDC around state-level policies for competitive foods. And as Joe mentioned, I don't have any financial relationships to disclose. The purpose of the presentation today is to discuss an analysis that we did of state-level competitive food policies so that we can describe the overall strength of state policies for competitive foods, to describe strategies that states and local education agencies can use to improve competitive foods and beverages in schools, and to highlight key resources to help assess and improve the quality of competitive foods in schools. So most of you are probably already very familiar with the term competitive foods, but just to set the context for the rest of the presentation, I want to mention that essentially when I say competitive foods, I'm referring to any food or beverage that's sold or served outside of the school meal programs on the entire school campus. And we know from research that these foods tend to be the main source of low nutrient, energy dense foods consumed at schools, and they're available through multiple venues during the school day, including the a la carte lines in the school cafeteria, snack bars, school stores, vending machines on campus, classroom celebrations and rewards for good behavior, and fundraisers on school grounds. I would also like to mention that there are, in fact, federal regulations for competitive foods, but they really only apply to a very small subset of competitive foods called foods of minimal nutritional value, or FMNVs. And the FMNVs have a very specific nutritional definition, and they fall into four main categories, which include soda water, water ices, chewing gum, and certain candies like jelly beans and gumdrops. So the current regulation from the U.S. Department of Agriculture is that FMNVs cannot be sold in the food service areas during the meal periods. However, most candy bars, non-carbonated soft drinks, chips, cookies, and ice cream are not considered FMNVs, and they can be sold anytime and anywhere on the school campus. Further, under the current regulations, FMNVs can be sold outside of the cafeteria during the school day, and we know that this is happening across the country each day. States and local education agencies can implement standards that go beyond the current federal regulations. And we also know that as a result of the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act of 2010, USDA will now have the authority to set nutrition standards for competitive foods sold during the school day. But this will not be effective for another 2 to 3 years. And so in the meantime, this current FMNV rule is what's currently in place and what schools must follow. So many states and local education agencies have adopted nutrition standards that are stronger than the current federal regulations. And we've seen how state policies can actually provide guidance to help inform districts to set nutrition standards for competitive foods as part of their local wellness policy. We really wanted to get a better understanding of how current state-level policies compare to each other, as well as how they compare to what's considered the gold standard in the field, the IOM nutrition standards for foods in schools. And so I'm not sure how familiar folks are with the IOM nutrition standards, but essentially they were published in 2007, and they're based on the Dietary Guidelines for Americans and current scientific evidence. And the IOM standards are a series of 13 standards that discuss not only the nutrient content of foods and beverages that can be sold during the school day, but there are also standards around marketing, the use of food as a reward or punishment, and also providing access to drinking water during the school day. So the purpose of our analysis was to assess the strength of state competitive food policies compared to the IOM standards. We also looked at the scope, which is really the content that is included in these policies, but we're only going to report on the strength portion today. This discusses the process that we used to conduct the analysis. So first, we gathered all of the relevant policy documents, including state laws, regulations, and State Board of Education policies as of October 1, 2010. We developed, tested, and revised a codebook to ensure that our coding was clear and objective. And then two CDC researchers independently coded each policy document, and the data were then compared. And any discrepancies in the coding were resolved either through reevaluation of the policy language and consensus or bringing in a third subject matter expert if needed. The data was then analyzed to determine the strength of each policy, and a report was created to summarize our findings. So as I mentioned earlier, our coding scheme was really centered around the 13 IOM standards, and this presented a little bit of a challenge for us just in terms of how the standards are written, which in some cases are quite complex. So we took each of the 13 IOM standards and we divided them into their subsequent variables to reflect the complexity of the standard. And this resulted in 33 variables. 28 of these variables were applicable to the elementary and middle school levels, and 33 were applicable to the high school levels. This is an example of how the standards were broken down. So IOM Standard 1 addresses dietary fat, and it states that snacks, foods, and beverages have no more than 35% of calories from fat, less than 10% calories from saturated fat, and zero trans fat. So we took this standard and broke it down into three subsequent variables, and each of those variables were coded at three different school levels, elementary, middle, and high school. So anyone who's done any type of coding of reports or policies knows that it's a very labor-intensive process. And this just gives a brief overview of the coding scheme that we use. So each variable was given a score of a 0, 1, or 2 for each school level, elementary, middle, and high school, at which it was applicable. So a value of 0 means that the variable was not mentioned or it does not meet the standard. A value of 1 meant that the variable partially meets the standard. So this could be, it may not apply to all venues on the school campus, or the standard may only apply to certain times of the school day. And a value of 2 meant that the variable fully met or exceeded the standard and applies to the entire school day and the entire campus. And this scheme is similar to the coding methodology used by Dr. Jamie Shariki with the Bridging the Gap work, as well as the WellSat tool developed by Dr. Marlene Schwartz. Each state received a policy strength score based on all 13 IOM standards at all three school levels combined, as well as each grade level independently. We also looked at a subset of the IOM standards that were related to the nutrient content of foods and beverages, that as these standards are what most directly impact the types of foods and beverages that are available during the school day. And here's an overview of how the scores were interpreted. So the higher the score, the stronger the policy. From 0 to 100 meant that it was what we considered an exemplary policy. From 50 to 79.9 was strong. From 21 to 49.9, medium, and from 0 to 20.9 was considered weak. So it's really important to note that this rating system is not a reflection of how well the policy is actually being implemented at the district and school levels, but rather the content of the policy documents themselves. And this score also does not reflect some of the great work that we know is going on around improving competitive food offerings at the district level, regardless of whether or not a state has a policy. So from our analysis, we found that as of October 1, 2010, 39 states had a policy for competitive foods in schools. 28 of these states had a policy that required schools to implement nutrition standards. 2 states had recently enacted legislation to develop nutrition standards for competitive foods, but no standards were in place at the time of the coding. 4 states, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Vermont, and Utah, had a policy, but the standards for competitive foods were not actually required. And so an example of this is Pennsylvania, which has standards, but they're not required, and schools that implement them will receive a financial incentive. And then 5 states, Delaware, Georgia, Maine, New York, and Oklahoma, had policies that further restricted the time and place for the sale of FMNVs beyond the current federal regulations, but they did not limit the other types of competitive foods that could be sold. Of the 39 states with policies for competitive foods, 33 states had policies that included provisions for all school levels. 4 states had policies that applied to only the elementary and middle school level, and 2 states had policies that applied to the elementary school level only. So this slide shows a summary of the number of states at each policy strength level. So for our coding scheme, there were no states that met the exemplary level, but 2 states had strong policies, Hawaii and West Virginia, and the majority of state policies scored medium or weak. So this map shows a geographic distribution of policy strength across the United States. And as you can see, there is a sort of a regional disparity in terms of states that do not have a policy for competitive foods, so sort of the Midwest and upper Midwest. So we also did a separate analysis looking at just the IOM standards 1 through 9 that address the nutrient content of foods and beverages. And with this analysis, there were three additional states that fell into the strong category: Iowa, Mississippi, and Alabama. And this slide is just another way of looking at that same analysis. So it compares the number of states in each policy strength category when looking at all of the IOM standards versus just the nutrient-specific standards. And as you can see, three states move from the medium category into the strong category when looking at just the nutrient standards alone. But there was not a change in the number of states in the weak category. And this slide shows the median strength scores and ranges for all school levels combined, as well as each school level independently when looking at all of the IOM standards, which is sort of the top bar of numbers, and then when looking at just the 9 standards related to the nutrient content of foods available during the school day. So the range of these scores vary dramatically in both analyses, and the median strength of the policy decreases as school level increases. And that's really the interesting point that we wanted to demonstrate with this slide. So as school level increases, we found that policy strength tended to decrease. And this is consistent with Dr. Shariki's work with Bridging the Gap, which looked at district level school wellness policies. And when looking at the nutrient standards alone by grade level, more state policies rank as strong at the elementary school level compared to the middle and high school levels. And one state, Arkansas, had a policy that ranked as exemplary, but it was only for the elementary school level. We also looked at which standards were most likely to be included in state-level policies at any grade level. And so keep in mind that these are the provisions that were most likely to be included in a policy, but it doesn't reflect the strength of that provision. So, for example, Tier 1 foods, which is what the IOM uses to define what can be sold during the school day, there was some element of that definition in 34 state policies. The majority of states, 24, included some provision around dietary fat and total sugars. 23 states mentioned something about sports drinks in their policy. 21 states mentioned fundraising, and 20 included a provision on calories. And these were the provisions that were least likely to be included in the state-level policy. Only 3 states included a provision on using food as a reward or discipline, as well as marketing. And less than a third of states included provisions on the use of non-nutritive sweeteners in competitive foods, caffeine, sodium, what could be sold after school, and providing access to drinking water during the school day. So this really gives us a good insight into where more efforts are likely needed to strengthen competitive food policies. So what does this information really tell us, given that we know that USDA is going to now establish nutrition standards for competitive foods? So I think there's a couple things to keep in mind. So at the federal level, this analysis has been used to help inform the development of the national standards for competitive foods. And these proposed standards will be released this winter for the public to review and provide comments. USDA expects to issue the final standards in the summer of 2013, and it will likely go into effect either school year 2014 or 2015. So there are several years before the new standards will actually be in place. And in the meantime, you know, we know that these new standards will be the minimum federal standards, and we are really encouraging states and local education agencies to continue to adopt and implement strong nutrition standards that align with IOM. States that do not have a policy can begin to form a working group or committee to discuss the implications of the new federal standards and to start creating an implementation plan to assist local education agencies with meeting the new requirements. States that do already have an existing policy for competitive foods can use the findings in this analysis to identify how they might improve or strengthen their existing policy compared to the IOM or compared to the new standards when they're proposed. And in terms of strengthening policy provisions, some states may choose to pilot revised standards in specific districts to gain a better understanding of implementation successes and challenges. all states can begin to develop training and technical assistance plans for school district staff to assist with the implementation of state and federal regulations. And we also just wanted to point out that there is a new requirement around providing access to drinking water in the food service area during the meal periods. And so we did notice from our analysis that providing access to drinking water was one of the provisions that was least likely to be included in a state policy. So this is really an area where states can help support local education agencies to meet this new requirement. At the local level, districts can review existing policies for competitive foods and compare them with the IOM standards and, again, the new standards once they are released. And districts can create an implementation plan, hopefully in collaboration with their state, to help schools meet not only local requirements but state and federal requirements as well. And we would really like to emphasize including monitoring and compliance as part of this implementation plan. So there are a number of resources that are available to states and local education agencies to assess and improve the quality of competitive foods in schools. The first, of course, is the IOM Nutrition Standards Report itself, which is a great starting point. It discusses in detail each of the standards as well as the evidence base behind each one of the standards. And CDC has created a series of audience-specific fact sheets for school staff, parents, and youth to use to support the development of strong nutrition standards. These fact sheets answer commonly asked questions about the report and provide recommendations for implementing the nutrition standards. And they're available on our website, which is cdc.gov/healthy-youth. The WellSat tool developed by Dr. Marlene Schwartz is a great resource to use as well in assessing and revising existing competitive food policies. And states and districts can be a great resource to each other as they have a lot of lessons learned in terms of implementation strategies. So just next steps for this analysis, the full report will be published on the CDC Healthy Youth website later in November. And what we're planning to do over the next year is create a series of state reports that will highlight each state's data in more detail. And then we also plan to do several related journal articles with this data and hope to begin to look at issues around implementation at the local level. So we would like to acknowledge several CDC staff and external reviewers for their support and feedback throughout this process. And if there are any questions, I can either take them now or I'll be happy to stay after this session is over. And I also have sort of a draft copy of our report if folks are interested in looking at that. Thank you very much.